There is no free lunch when it comes to investing, but what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to The Free Lunch, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to The Free Lunch Podcast with Greg and Colin. Greg, here we are.
Here we are again. Yeah.
Yeah, here we are again.
It's fun to be here.
It is fun to be here. And yeah. We have a fun topic today.
We do.
We like to have fun with our topics,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And be serious with them at the same time, right?
Yep.
Because the principles are serious, but doesn't mean you can't have a little fun.
Exactly.
So, Greg, what are we talking about today?
Well, listen, yesterday was a very famous day.
Oh, let's not say yesterday. We don't want people to know when we're recording.
Okay, the day that we're recording this.
At some point in the past was a very famous day.
Yeah, it was July 1st. And of course, to most Canadians, you know, and maybe the odd person outside of Canada, maybe not too many, mm-hmm. they would know it as Canada Day.
Yep.
Canada Day. There's a lot of N's and yep. A's and D's in there. Canada Day.
Yep.
Anyway, but it's also another important day.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that?
You want me to say?
Please do.
Okay, it was Bobby Bonilla Day.
Bobby Bonilla.
Yep.
So who's Bobby Bonilla?
Well, Bobby Bonilla is a retired baseball player who played for a few teams, but his last team was the New York Mets.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
And why do people celebrate Bobby Bonilla Day?
Well, every July 1st, the New York Mets have to pay Bobby Bonilla a check in the sum of $1,193,248.20.
Which, you know, for most baseball players, you'd think, okay, well, that's not that much. But when did Bobby Bonilla stop playing baseball?
It's interesting because he retired, I think, in 2010.
Okay.
And so he's been collecting these checks since 2011.
Yeah.
And he's going to keep collecting them until 2035. So in total, he will receive about $30 million in payments for a contract that was originally worth $5.9 million.
Unbelievable. $30 million from $5.9.
Yep.
And listen, I mean, Bobby Bonilla wasn't exactly hurting for cash when he took this form of compensation, which is deferred compensation. And I think during his playing career, he earned about $52 million in salary alone, not including endorsements. So he wasn't hurting for cash. So why did he and why did the Mets decide to compensate him this way?
Yeah, well, because they're crazy.
Yep. In hindsight, I think we can clearly say that.
No, you know what? I guess the way it worked out is, you know, the deal was they were going to lock in this 8% guaranteed annual interest
yep.
to not have to pay the $5.9 million up front.
Right.
Right. And at the time, we were talking about this before we started recording, the New York Mets owner was invested with Bernie Madoff.
Okay. And as a reminder to people out there, Bernie Madoff was not the most, let's say, ethical investment manager.
I think the proper term is scumbag.
Right.
But,
okay.
You know, in the Madoff Ponzi scheme, they were sort of guaranteeing 12% rates of return.
Yeah.
So you can see that for the Mets, they said, well, if we're getting 12% rate of return on our money and we only have to pay out 8% of this amount to Bobby Bonilla, then we're going to net 4% ahead.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened.
That's not what happened. So.
So what, tell us what really happened here, Greg.
What really happened? So instead of taking the lump sum buyout of $5.9 million back in 2000, Bonilla agreed to defer it for 10 years and start taking payments in 2011. And so at 8% annual interest by 2011, the amount grew to about $12.5 million from the original $5.9 million.
Which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than that one lump sum, it's spread over 25 annual payments, which we said was about $1.19 million per year,
yep.
which is basically like an annuity has been created for Bobby Bonilla.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And this is compounding in its purest form. I mean, your money earns returns and those returns earn more returns.
Yeah.
And so I guess we can say that Bobby Bonilla and his manager were extremely clever in arranging this deal.
Yeah, for sure. Clever, and I would say lucky too.
Yep.
You know, it just worked out for them, because all it really highlights to us is the power of compounding.
Absolutely.
Right? Which is like one of the most basic principles of investing.
Exactly.
It's basically how soon you start and how long you stay invested.
Yeah, so I mean, here's just a simple example. If you invest $100,000 at 8% annual returns and leave it alone for 25 years, you would end up with about $685,000.
Yeah, it's just simple math, yeah, right?
Exactly.
We're not making up these numbers. This is what the calculator comes out.
That's right.
Comes up with. But in that example, if you wait 10 years before you start, so you only have 15 years of growth, instead of getting $685,000, you'd end up with $317,000, which is quite a bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. Time is definitely on your side there. And it's why compounding is so powerful. And reportedly, Albert Einstein called it the eighth wonder of the world, because it rewards time and patience more than anything else, really.
Yeah. Okay. But let's talk about it in the real world context.
Sure. Okay. Well, here's a snapshot, you know, for people to relate to. In Canada, over the past 50 years, the S&P TSX Composite Index, so the index of Canadian stocks that most people pay attention to, has averaged 8 to 9% annual returns. And more recently, from 2000 to 2023, it's been around 6.8%. Mm-hmm. And in the US, the S&P 500 has averaged about 10% per year since 1926, or about 7% after inflation.
Yeah, those are important numbers. And also, I want to point out that just because that's been the historical average doesn't mean that's what we expect always.
Absolutely right? Not.
It's just the way it's worked out.
And I think technically, I don't know that the index has ever actually provided the average in any one year.
It hasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. Yeah, the S&P 500 has never returned in one year what the long-term average is.
Right.
There's been some variation, right? Mm-hmm. And you see it in all those fancy index charts that people like to pull out, right? And say, well, you know, in this period of time, you would have returned X. In this period of time, you would have returned Y, whatever.
Yep.
But if we talk about that Canadian example, so in Canada, we're blessed with something called the tax-free savings accounts.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
So if you invested $6,000 a year into a TFSA starting at age 25, and it earned 7% annually, and you let it grow for 40 years to age 65, you'd have roughly $1.1 million of tax-free investments.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Now, keep in mind, $1.1 million by the time you're age 65 is not worth the same as $1.1 million when you're 25, but
no,
it's still
that's right.
A good return.
It is, for sure. And the other thing, too, of course, in that example is that, you know, you're assuming you invest $6,000 a year, but, of course, the contribution limits increase with inflation as well, with a consumer price index. And so even if you just make the yearly maximum allowed, you would be able to stay up with inflation there.
Yeah.
You know, but so your example, you start at age 25, you end up with 1.1 million by age 65. But if you waited 10 years until you started saving, so if you waited until age 35, you'd end up with just $540,000. So about half. So that's the cost of delay. You know, you delay for 10 years and it costs you half.
Yeah.
You're still investing. You know, from age 35 to 60, you're still investing for 30 years.
Yeah.
But you've lost half the potential, you know, final value.
Just from compounding, right?
Yeah.
You know, the only issue I have with these examples has been, I think about when I was 25 years old, I didn't have $6,000
no.
to put into a TFSA.
No.
You know, or now we've got first home savings accounts too.
That's right.
Right? Which are $8,000 a year for, mm-hmm. is it five years?
Yeah.
Maximum $40,000.
Yeah.
These are great vehicles. The reality is that I don't know too many 25-year-olds that have $14,000 to put away into TFSA, FHSA, and then not even talk about RSP contributions.
That's right. Yeah. And so there is there is some realism that you have to bake into this, but the realism is beneficial, you know, it's realistic, you know, at the younger ages, and these are quite conservative at older ages, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what you hope is that, okay, well, yes, most 25-year-olds can't put away $7,000 this year into a tax-free savings account and $8,000 into a first home savings account and whatever their RSP contribution limits are, et cetera. But there's always something.
Yeah.
You know, and I think anybody, even 25-year-olds, if you can save $100 a month, you know, it gets you started.
Yeah.
And not only will it contribute to your final, the final value of your investments, but it also contributes to your discipline in terms of saving. So absolutely right. Most 25-year-olds won't be making those kinds of contributions, but most can make something.
I think this is where some family intergenerational wealth planning needs to come into play.
For sure.
Because even if that, you know, younger person can't afford to max out their TFSAs, perhaps if the plan is to, you know, leave an estate to those people,
yeah,
why not fund their TFSAs
absolutely out of
your own pocket, right?
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to them anyways, right?
That's right. And it's basically taking money that's tax paid and making it tax free.
Yeah. Anyways, we probably killed that one, but okay. Let's talk about timing the market though, because a lot of people think they can wait for a better time to invest. We see this all the time. You know, part of it is like hindsight bias. You know, I knew the market was going to go down in April because of the tariffs in the US.
Yeah. Right?
Or I knew the market was going to go down in March of 2020 because of COVID or whatever.
Yep.
So people will often try to time the market, and sometimes that means they miss the best days.
For sure. Yeah. And we know that the market returns are what we call lumpy. Mm-hmm. They don't come consistently, and that's why you never see the market averages, you know, the market returns equal the averages in any one year.
Yeah.
It's because they're on either side of it.
Yep.
And so this gets to one of my favorite statistics. If you look at the S&P 500 from 1990 to 2020, so that 30-year period, the annualized return was about 9.9% if you just stayed fully invested for that whole time.
Yeah, but if you missed the 10 best days in the market over a 30-year period, which isn't missing a lot of days.
No.
Right? So that's, you know, let's say there's 220 trading days in a year, 10 years, what's that, 2,200 days or so.
Yep.
And you missed 10 of them.
Yeah.
Then your return dropped to 6%.
Yep, exactly. And if you missed the 20 best days, it fell to 3.6%.
And carrying on this theme,
yep.
If you missed the 30 best days, then your return was basically flat at about 1% per year. That's a significant difference.
Yeah. Yeah, and it gets worse. If you missed the best week, best month, or best year, the drag on the long-term performance was even more dramatic.
Yeah, so just highlighting this whole notion of timing markets, we just don't believe that it works. And it's not that we just don't believe that it works. We have evidence to show that it just typically doesn't, right?
Well, in recent example, you know, if you look what happened, you know, back on what was famously called Liberation Day in the U.S.,
yep.
When that was the day when all of the tariffs, you know, supposedly were going to take effect around the world, and massive tariffs, you know, 130% or whatever it was for China, and 10% on countries that, you know, that got along well with the U.S. and other ones higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you in advance of that, if you thought, oh, this is going to be bad, you got out of the market and you missed some downturn. Mm-hmm. But what happened a couple days later, you know, when all of a sudden it was announced that there was going to be a 90-day pause in the market, I think the Dow was up, what, 1,500 points or something in one day?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you missed some downside and you missed more upside.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a very difficult thing, but it just shows you how, you know, people don't always believe that, oh, really, if you just missed 10 days, that's how much it would affect you? But it does.
Yeah.
It does pretty dramatically.
You know, I was just reading a book on the weekend. Sometimes I like to read, Greg.
You do?
I do.
You have time for that. Good for you.
Well, once in a while. Yeah. It's a fellow that you and I both know, Daniel Crosby.
Yes.
And his book, The Soul of Wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of highlighted a lot of what you just said. And, you know, it's just stay invested, right? Like, don't capitulate. Don't put yourself in harm's way. You know?
Yeah.
Don't overthink it.
Mm-hmm.
Just have a plan. Stick to it. You know, like you said, $100 a month into a TFSA, if the market goes down, well, then you just are getting more for your money.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, Warren Buffett said, you know, most investors, you know, look at it the wrong way. You know, they get upset when the market goes down and elated when the market goes up. And if you're a net saver or a net investor, like young people, you know, the 25 to 35 to 45 year olds who have a lot of runway, as they say, ahead of them, you should be delighted you know, when things go down, because you're getting more for your money.
Yeah.
You're buying more shares or more bonds, you know, through your funds at lower prices, you know, and who goes into a store looking for the most expensive things? You know, you look for things, or many people look for things that are on sale. If you can get the same item that you're interested in at a lower cost, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I had a friend that I recently reconnected with, and it was when the market was down. It had, you know, gotten to an all-time high, and then it sold off 20%.
Yep.
And he said to me, are you nervous about the market? And I said, no, not really. I said, I kind of look at this like they're bay days, right? Like you're walking in and everything's on sale, you know? Like, you know it's going to go back up.
Yeah.
You know you're going to come back in the store another day and it's going to be full price again.
Yeah.
Right?
So yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, let's get back to Bobby Bonilla's story, because that's how we started with. But
okay.
So he didn't take the money right away.
No.
He delayed gratification, just like the investors who stay the course during some of those market cycles.
That's right. So his money was basically invested the whole time from when he stopped playing baseball in 2000 until he started taking payments in 2011. He stayed invested. It was forced. It was like a retirement plan or an annuity. So it was forced to stay invested. And he had a guaranteed return of 8%, although as you just said, money invested in the stock market over a long period of time would have provided the same return.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, you know, because even if you sign, like my dad would always talk about buying an 8% GIC.
Yeah.
I was like, well, okay, first of all, those don't exist.
Right.
So that's a unicorn.
Yeah.
Right. But even if you did get it, right, at some point it's going to come up for renewal.
That's
right. And you're not going to get 8% again.
Yeah.
You're going to get whatever interest rates are at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had just stayed invested in the S&P 500 over that same period, you probably actually got closer to 10.
Yep.
Crazy. No,
that's right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. All right. What are we talking about next? Stanford marshmallow experiment.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What's that?
Well, this is staying the course kind of reminds me of that Stanford marshmallow experiment, where you're familiar with this one, where, you know, kids are offered a marshmallow, but if they wait, I don't remember how long it was, like 20 minutes, an hour or whatever, they got two marshmallows or something. Right?
Something better.
Yeah. And they actually like tracked these kids through their lives, because this goes back to, was it in the 80s?
Yeah, I think so.
And they tracked these kids in how they made out with, well, where they were, you know, decades later.
Yep.
And those that seemed to be able to delay gratification seemed to have, I don't want to say better lives, but financially better anyways.
And delayed gratification is such an important part of everything that you would be doing with clients in financial planning, right? Because saving is delayed gratification.
Yeah.
You know, if you're 25 years old and you have an extra $100, you know, after, you know, receiving your paycheck and spending the money that you need to spend each month, you know, putting the money into savings or long-term investing is just delayed gratification, because you could certainly, I'm sure most people could figure out, okay, well, I've got $100 to spend. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be okay. I could go to a game, you know, play an extra round of golf, and maybe go out for wings and beer, whatever it is that you might want to do. You have to delay, you know, the gratification of spending that money, you know, to spend ideally more in the future.
Yeah. And we're all surrounded by people that don't, right?
That's right.
I mean, I know people that always have the nicest cars, the nicest houses, that they go on the nicest trips. And I'm always like, how are they doing this? You know, they're not in that delayed gratification camp. They're in the instant gratification camp.
That's right. You know, and listen, it would be wonderful to be in the position where, when it comes to saving or investing, that you didn't have to worry.
Mm-hmm.
You've got lots to spend now and lots to save for later. But most people aren't in that boat.
Yeah.
You know, so most people have to choose one, you know, or find a happy medium that allows you to enjoy your life and still, you know, plan for the future.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about what Warren Buffett says about the stock market.
Yep. And he had a lot of good quotes, obviously.
Yes.
Has a lot of good quotes. He's still with us.
Yep.
But he would say the stock market is a device for transferring money from the impatient to the patient.
Yeah.
And again, that just gets to what we were just talking about.
Okay. Speaking of impatient and patient, Bobby Bonilla isn't the only player to set up a deferred contract. There have been a few, right?
Yep.
So there's a guy named Ken Griffey Jr.
Yep.
Signed a 9-year, $116.5 million contract with the Cincinnati Reds in 2000. Part of it was deferred, so the Reds are paying him $3.59 million every year, and that just ended in 2024.
Nice.
So he received 24 years or 25 years of payments.
Yeah.
Even though he retired 15 years ago.
Right.
Crazy.
Yep.
Right? Max Scherzer signed a seven-year, $210 million contract with the Nationals. From 2022 to 2028, he receives $15 million every Bobby Bonilla day.
Well, okay. So Max Scherzer day too.
They'll have to change the name. Totaling $105 million in deferred payments, plus whatever he earns now because he's still playing with a different team.
Yeah.
So he's getting paid by the new team.
That's pretty amazing.
And getting $15 million in deferred payments from his old team.
That reminds me of, you remember the show Moneyball?
Yeah, of course.
And you remember the player who Brad Pitt tells that his old team was still paying him. So they were actually paying him to play for a different team. That's how badly they didn't want him playing for them.
They think you're so bad. Yeah. They would choose to play against you and pay your contract.
Now, there is another deferred contract that even makes those ones seem small by comparison. Mm-hmm. Tell me about it.
Well, there's a guy named Shohei Ohtani.
Heard of him, of course.
Everybody has.
Of course.
Wears number 17, plays for my beloved Los Angeles Dodgers.
Right.
Yeah, he signed a $700 million contract, but he deferred, what was it, like?
$68 million. So it's a 10-year contract.
Yeah.
10-year contract, and instead of taking $70 million a year for 10 years, he's taking $2 million a year and deferring $68 million of it to the future.
That's crazy.
So do you think a guy like he can survive on $2 million a year?
I think everybody in the world can survive on $2 million a year.
Yeah.
There's no reason why you can't.
and if you're feeling sorry for the guy, I believe his endorsements and other forms of income would probably notch him way back up into the double digits.
Yeah, I don't think he has any problems. But
yeah,
okay. Well, let's bring this home for investors. What can we learn out of this, Greg?
Well, I think first of all, start early. You know, because compounding is most powerful when you give it decades, not years, but decades.
Yep.
Yeah.
The second thing I would say is stay invested, and this can be a very difficult thing to do when you're surrounded by headlines that tell you how awful markets are, or, you know, certain presidents are going to do this or not do that.
Yep.
You know, so trying to time the market and missing even a handful of those good days can really cripple your long-term results.
Yeah, right on. A third, I think being consistent. So to whatever extent you can automate contributions, it keeps you from having your emotions get in the way. And that's one of the best savings ideas for anybody is just, you know, the money comes out of the bank, you know, once a month, twice a month.
Just a bill payment.
Yep, exactly. And if you don't see it in the account, you won't spend it.
Yep. And lastly, we would say be patient. So Bobby Bonilla's patience turned 5.9 million into almost 30 million without playing another inning.
Yeah. Crazy. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and wondering, well, how does this apply to me? I would say, you know, ask yourself a few questions. You know, first of all, are you letting compounding work in your favor? Meaning, are you giving it time and staying invested? Are you automating your savings, as we talked about? Staying invested through the ups and downs? And making decisions your future self will thank you for.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that listen to these shows, friends and family as well, when we're in conversations, and they just don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And the place to start is to talk to somebody in this field, right? And am I giving a shout out for Canvas Wealth here, Greg?
Well, why wouldn't you?
Of course I am. But if it's not Canvas Wealth, make sure it's somebody else that is able to give you good advice, creating your own version of Bobby Bonilla Day where you can set up yourself for reliable long-term income. And this can be one of the most powerful moves you ever make.
Yeah, right on. So that's it for today. Thanks for joining us to explore the intersection of baseball, patience, the magic of compounding, and maybe avoiding scams like the Madoff Ponzi scheme.
Yes. Anytime somebody uses the words like guaranteed or
Or I make 1% a year or 1% a month, 12% a year, every year, year in, year out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How?
Yes. Be cautious.
Yeah. All right. And lastly, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. We really would appreciate that. And let us know if there's any topics you want us to cover, because we do cover a lot of ground here.
Yep, you bet.
All right.
Next time.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.